Look out, the focus is off Apple this week. Today is February 18th, 2006, and this is the TMO2Go Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Slow week in the news, but that's not my problem. We've still got plenty of fodder for the context machine. I'll take advantage of the downtime to look into the burgeoning podcast industry. That's right, I said it. Industry. Not hobby, not playground, not kiddie pool. Industry. Podcasting industry. Podshow Inc., which was co-founded by former MTV video DJ and podcasting pioneer Adam Curry, on Tuesday announced a joint venture with Limelight Networks to launch Podshow PDN, for Podcast Delivery Network. Podshow says that the service offers scalability for managing, delivering, and tracking thousands of podcasts. Podshow PDN also features tools for creating, publishing, and uploading content. Podshow currently serves its own collection of shows through this podcast delivery network. During the first quarter of 2006, the company will open the service to all amateur and professional podcasters of both the audio and video variety. That may be the only podcast-related news we carried this week, but there's a whole pile of context to be found behind this story, so we'll get to that in just a moment. We also carried stories this week about two potential entrants to the digital downloads market, Google and Amazon. It appears Amazon is poised to launch such a service in the near term. According to a Wall Street Journal report, Amazon would follow a subscription model, rather in the vein of the mobile phone networks. As a bonus for signing up, the user would get a steeply discounted music player, analogous to the discounts on phones upon signing a mobile phone contract. What amounts to a proof-of-concept Trojan horse application for the Mac started circulating around the internet on Thursday. The malware-style application called Oompa Loompa, or OS X Leap A, depending on where you read about it, attempts to trick unsuspecting users into thinking that it is a JPEG image. If launched, the application requires administrator access before it can install files that attempt to send copies of itself to people in iChat's buddy list. To date, there are no known viruses for Mac OS X. This unsophisticated proof of concept is not a virus and does not take advantage of any security flaws in Mac OS X. It also relies on features in Mac OS X Tiger, so it is likely that certain parts of its code can't operate on earlier versions of the Mac OS. In response to the news, Intego on Thursday released a Q&A that addresses the situation. The company noted that the Intego Virus Barrier X and Virus Barrier X4 virus definitions, which it released on February 14th, will eradicate the Trojan horse and ensure that any future Trojan horse using the same technique will be destroyed as well. If this sounds like a silly story, I can hardly disagree, except as a matter of public relations. On that score, Apple Computer took the matter seriously enough to release an official statement on the software. Watchers of Apple will note that this is a rare step for the company, which issues very few statements to the press. The announcement simply said that OS X Leap A is not a virus. By the way, for those keeping score, Apple's stock ended the week up at $70.29 a share. All right, enough of that. Let's get to some context. In preparing this week's show, I went through several possible topics for the context machine before I realized that it was, in fact, an honest-to-goodness, slow period in the news. Fact is, Amazon entering the music downloading biz will be a real story when they release the service, assuming that they actually do. Ditto for a Mac virus. The week a real virus, or a truly cross-platform worm, or a dangerous Trojan horse actually surfaces, then I'll take the time to cover it in the context machine. Until then, I'll be keeping my knickers firmly unbunched. So this week, we're going to veer a bit off topic and take a look at podcasting. And of course, at TMO, there's one man above them all to go to on that subject. The man of many hats, president and COO of Backbeat Media, president of the Mac Observer, and co-host of TMO's Mac Geek Gab podcast, Dave Hamilton, who's braved windstorms and power outages and freezing heat pipes to join me. Dave, welcome to the show.
Greetings, sir. Yeah, it's been a crazy weekend, to say the least.
But we're glad you're here.
So, I'm glad I'm here, too.
Cheers. Cheers. So let's start talking about the this podcast delivery network. The announcement itself was pretty vague. I mean, it was a kind of a standard press release that said, hey, we're doing this.
Yeah.
So what is it that you think, in your words, just as in your way of seeing what's going on here, what is Podshow trying to do with this delivery network?
Well, it's interesting, of course, because they follow a format that's different from other companies and sort of by design that way. They like to talk about things on all their podcasts and then issue the press release last. So I was kind of surprised to see the press release about this come out before the network was really publicly available. But of course, Adam Curry on his Daily Source Code podcast has been talking about this network for a long time. So none of the details in the press release were actually new, but they were just sort of formalized. What they're trying to do with it, to answer the question, is to offer podcasters, independent podcasters, an easy way of getting their stuff out there on a reliable network, something that's not going to go down. And from what I understand, of course, I haven't seen it. They're trying to offer a turnkey operation for, quote unquote, the little guy, which, frankly, I think is great. So
now in the announcement, they say the delivery network is supposed to do three things. They say manage, deliver, and track. So the first two, it sounds like you were talking about those a little bit, but just for people that aren't necessarily familiar with the process of podcasting, what does it mean to manage and deliver a show?
Oh, sure. Well, and again, this is my interpretation, but I think it's a fairly safe assumption to say that what they're looking to do is, when you create a podcast, in the end, you wind up with a file, usually an MP3 audio file or an AAC if you're doing an enhanced show or something like that. But for the sake of argument, let's say an MP3 file. And then you need to get that into the hands, for lack of a better term, of your listeners. And the way to do that is you've got to go through this process of uploading the file to an FTP server somewhere and all these other things that involve a lot of acronyms far more scary than MP3. So it's not an automatic process. Then you need to post it to your blog and you need to get it linked and yada, yada, yada. It's not a fun process, and there's no one out there that really has made it simple. You know, we've got blogging engines, right, for people that want to get out there and they just want to blog and they don't want to think about it. You can go to a service, sign up, and you've got a blog. You just type, and magically it appears on the web. My assumption, based on everything I've heard them say publicly, is that that's exactly what they're trying to do with podcasting. You create your thing, you plug it in a very easy interface, and quote unquote magically it appears in the hands of your listeners or on their iPod or wherever they want to get it.
Fair enough. So that's and like you said, there are services to some greater or lesser degree of success with podcasting, but certainly with other things like blogs that do some of that managing and delivering. One of the things that caught my eye was this third thing, the tracking thing. What do you think they're talking? What, first of all, what is tracking of a podcast? What does that mean to track a podcast?
Well, these days, what tracking means is you want to know how many people downloaded your podcast. Ultimately, you'd really like to know how many people actually listen to it, but the tools to do that on a wide scale aren't in place. And that's simply because there's nothing through Apple's iTunes, which of course is the largest aggregator of podcasts, or largest podcatcher, if you will. By podcatcher, I mean client that downloads podcasts. There's no way of telling, did someone listen to my podcast? So for now, tracking means how many people downloaded it, and maybe who, at least in terms of, you know, where they are geographically and that sort of thing.
And now that starts to sound, when you talk about asking the question, how many people listened to it versus how many people downloaded it, we're past the point then of talking about just kind of wanting to know roughly how much exposure I have, but you're starting to get into details that start to sound pretty commercial. And in fact, that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about here. The language of this press release was very commercial. It was very sort of it was appropriate for a wide business savvy audience, and I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that fact as well. It seems very different from the language of the podcast community. If you go into the forums on Podcast Alley or Podcasting News, anywhere where people talk about podcasts or what they're doing, the language they use there seems to be very different from the language of this press release.
Well, you're right. And I'm going to, before I launch into this answer, I do want to just state for full disclosure, and you said it at the beginning, of course, I'm president and CEO of Backbeat Media, and we do represent some podcasts. So in some ways, we actually do compete with bits and pieces of Podshow. I do like a lot of what they're doing, but just wanted to get that out there. That said, thank you. That said, they've already marketed the podcast delivery network to podcasters. They've been talking about it, Adam Curry specifically, in his podcast for months about what this network's going to be. And again, there weren't a whole lot of details, but most podcasters understand that it's going to be to some degree a turnkey operation. So I think the podcasters are sold on this. My feeling is that this press release was not for the podcasters. This was for quote unquote everyone else, meaning especially the agencies. They want the advertising agencies to know that any podcasts that come through Podshow are going to be delivered in a manner that is unrivaled or at least reliable, and going to, you know, any podcast that's out there through Podshow will make it into the ears of their listeners, no questions asked. And that's what the press release says, and you're right, it says it in very business terms, and it was not targeted at the podcasters. That's my feeling anyway.
So Podshow is one of the people, it's one of the organizations out there looking to monetize podcasting. Now, podcasting is something at least a year ago or 2 years ago that people, I mean, it was something you did in your basement like people did with websites, you know, 15 years ago. And so there's clearly a lot of people who are interested in making the transition from kind of a hobby to a business, to an actual entertainment or news or information industry. Now, it sounds like you're saying you think the podcasters are totally comfortable with that. They're happy to make money off of what they do. So of the people involved in making podcasting a business, who would you say are the groups that need the most convincing that this is really a viable business?
Well, I mean, the advertising agencies certainly, you know, like I said, we're sort of in the same boat with Backbeat Media. So we see the other side of this. And there's a lot of education that needs to happen, frankly. All the advertisers out there, a lot of them anyway, are skeptical. We're not even skeptical. They're just lacking knowledge. You know, it coming from the radio side, frankly, makes it easier to understand this than it does coming from the website. But even still, there's quite a bit that's just unknown. And so a lot of what Podshow and us and everybody else are doing out there is educating the masses to let them know what this is, how it works best, where it doesn't work for them, and putting it all together.
So just now a prediction, if I could ask you to look into your crystal ball, how, first of all, do you think that podcasting will successfully make the transition into fundamentally an industry?
Well, I think that's the wrong way to look at it, to be honest with you. Podcasting is a delivery medium. So, just like the web allows us to either deliver, if you're a content producer, or read or consume news or anything, the same is true for podcasting. So you can get, you know, your news on the web or via a podcast. You can get, which is what all of our listeners here are doing, you can get entertainment on the web or via a podcast. So, I mean, different industries will use this medium as a way of getting their content to their listeners or their audience, rather, in general. Do I think it'll succeed? Absolutely. And what really convinces me of that is looking at the TiVo model. The idea of having, and when you look at it this way, it seems obvious. The idea of having time-shifted audio content available for you to listen to when you want to, that will, I mean, once that cat's out of the bag, which it is, it'll never go away. It'll only gain steam. 10 years from now, will we call it podcasting? Who knows? Will it exist in the current form? Certainly not. You know, it's going to change dramatically, but it's not going, you know, there's no way to close this Pandora's box.
Fair enough. And there's one other thing that I suppose deserves mentioning. You backed off when I started to call it an industry, and I'm sure that there are a lot of podcasters out there who are glad to hear that. I mean, the podcasters that I see posting and talking about this stuff very often are resistant to the idea of letting it become entirely commercial, because that carries with it the connotation that the barrier to entry becomes higher, that it becomes harder for the guy in his basement who just wants to make something and put it out there for people to listen to, all of a sudden can't do that the way he could. But that won't change either, right?
Well, no. I mean, as far as the technology goes and the cost of actually being able to create a podcast, that will always be as cheap as it is now. However, with more podcasts out there, the trick isn't creating it. It's getting it in front of the people that may become your audience and letting them know about it. And that's, frankly, the problem that's existed throughout time, right? I mean, you create something, you want distribution on it, and you want marketing on it. And that's, you know, the same thing that the record industry does for you. It's the same thing that the TV networks do for you. It's the same thing the movie industry does. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, when there were 1,000 podcasts, if you wanted to listen to a podcast, you could pretty much, you know about all of the ones that would appeal to you. Now, there's too many podcasts to just automatically be able to know, for any given person to know every one of them. So you got to be able to find what it is you want as a listener. And of course, as a podcast producer, you got to be able to get your stuff in front of the people that you think might want to listen to it. And so that barrier will continue to be built and will continue to get higher and higher. And that's just life.
Fair enough. Let's switch gears a little bit. Just briefly, I want to talk about this story about Amazon possibly entering the digital downloads business. You are one of the most sort of online savvy consumers, just users of online services. So I'm curious, just first of all, as a consumer, does the idea of having Amazon having a subscription music service intrigue you at all?
Absolutely. These guys from day one have known what to do. I mean, for years, of course, they didn't make money, but they know how to treat customers. And to me, that's the keystone of success to any business, is treating your customers properly. And they clearly they know how to do that. They lost money for years doing that. So my guess is when they come out of the gate, they will find a way to succeed, because they know what their business needs to be.
All right. And so when you think about Amazon coming into this marketplace, do you see them sort of taking the same or a similar position to the one that Napster currently has? Napster is often held up as the example of a subscription music service. Do you think Amazon's going to move into a model very much like Napster's?
It would stand to reason. But again, who knows? But I would think so. I mean, it's a logical model to follow if you're going to do the subscription thing. So, I would think so.
All right. And you suspect that there will be a significant difference? Napster has had trouble gaining traction against iTunes. Do you think that Amazon might have more success for some reason?
Well, Napster came into this game with a huge black mark on them, right? I mean, they're the ones that created the software, or at least their name was the name of the software that got the RIAA all up in arms about this to begin with. So I think there was some resistance there. You know, the RIAA, as well, at least my feeling,
which, by the way, is Recording Industry Association of America.
Thank you.
For anyone.
No, thank you. I make some assumptions. Doing the Geek Gab podcast, there's, you know, a different audience. So thank you. They've got a business model that 20 years from now will be gone. And so they need to be very careful politically about who they align themselves with. And to go after all these kids using Napster and then align themselves with Napster in almost the same breath, not so good, right? But to align themselves with Apple or to align themselves with Amazon, that's not such a bad thing, that, politically speaking. So I think, at least in that term, the Amazon will see greater success than Napster. As far as the consumers go, who knows? you know, that remains to be seen. It really depends on how people want their music. And I definitely think there's an age gap there. Those of us that grew up buying records and very in the mindset of owning music won't want to switch to a subscription model. But, you know, the younger generation may not care in the least. What's the difference? I pay $10 a month. I can listen to whatever I want. Okay, sounds good to me. You know, they just aren't of the mindset that you have to own everything and look at my record collection and that whole thing that at least I grew up with. So,
fair enough. And that's going to have to be the last word. Dave, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ricky. And thanks for putting up with my schedule this weekend.
No problem. Hopefully the weather will cooperate better next time.
Indeed.
And now for the product roundup. AvanQuest software is now shipping two Mac-compatible applications for iPod users. Pod Presenter, which enables creating, editing, viewing, and transporting PowerPoint presentations with an iPod, and iPocket Bible, which lets users carry text and audio of the Bible on their iPods. Pod Presenter sells for $30 US. iPocket Bible sells for $40. The Camino Project announced that the Camino web browser is finally out of beta and officially shipping as version 1.0 on Tuesday. Camino is built on the Mozilla Gecko web rendering engine and offers pop-up, ad blocking, tabbed browser windows, keychain and address book support, and more. Camino 1.0 is free and available for download at the Camino website. Pangea Software released its latest game, Enigmo 2, on Friday. Enigmo 2 is a puzzle game that includes 50 levels and a built-in level editor, and user-created levels can be shared with other players. Enigmo 2 is available for download at the Pangea Software website and costs $30. Mac Practice Inc. will, on March 1st, release version 2 of its healthcare practice management applications for physicians, chiropractors, and dentists. MacPractice MD for physicians starts at $2,000 for a single user, while the dentist and chiropractor versions start at $1,500. Networked versions are $500 per five users, and scheduling, e-claims, and perio charting modules are $500 each. MySQL is required. I can tell you that I was delighted to see that Otherworld Computing and NewerTech have released high-capacity new power replacement batteries for the 15-inch PowerBook G4. They are available at the NewerTech website in two capacities for $130 and $140. Alien Apparatus Company announced the immediate availability of Solar Performer Show Controller 3 on Friday. Solar Performer controls background music, lyrics display, and lighting effects with a 6-button foot controller. Solar Performer Show Controller 3 is priced at $595. And this week, Misha Sakalaropoulou reviews the extremely sweet Audio Engine speakers and a kickstand case for the Video iPod. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. I'm done. That's all the context you get. Stay subscribed, and until next week, we'll see you online.